Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. Whether your pursuit involves a bachelor's, master's, or doctoral degree, GCU's learning environments are designed for supportive networking and collaboration. With over 330 academic programs, GCU provides a path to help you fulfill your dreams. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Find your purpose at GCU. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to episode 322 of the Professional Book Nerds podcast presented by Overdrive. This is Jill. Hello, Adam.
Hello. How's it going?
I'm trying not to sneeze. I'm good.
Good timing. Yeah, it is the end of March, which means we are going to today jump all into our April books that we're very excited about.
April.
What did you say it was?
June. Earlier this week, I was like, June books.
Yeah, time flies, but not apparently as fast as Jill thinks it does. We've got a couple of fun announcements that we're going to go through before we get to the books. The first one, and I didn't even mention that. Did we talk about Harlan Coben on a previous episode, or is this the first we're mentioning?
We did.
Okay. Oh, yeah, you're right.
Last
so
week.
We interviewed Harlan Coben. Yeah, you're right. We interviewed Harlan Coben over the weekend. It was awesome. Super exciting. And that will be up, I think, Monday. So I'm excited for you guys to listen to that. Thanks to my friends at Cuyahoga County Public Library for hosting and the 400 people who came to the event. That was amazing. They came for Harlan. They didn't come for us. Let's be
honest.
They
did not come for us.
It's always fun to, like, when I hear, like, comedy podcasts that I love, like, clearly their crowds are all there for them. So when we're like, there were 500 people there, it's like, well, there were 500 people there to see the amazing author. They seem to like us, too.
Yeah.
So that was good. So the first thing that we want to talk about briefly is Big Library Read is coming back.
It is.
So it kicks off April 1st. And runs for 2 weeks. Do you want to explain to people? Do you want me? Oh, you're making
no, I can.
Face.
I can. Yeah.
All right. Do you want to explain to people who might be recent listeners what Big Library Read is?
Sure. So Big Library Read is our digital ebook club.
Mm-hmm.
Where if you go to your library's Overdrive site during the time of the promotion,
yeah, those 2 weeks,
you will be able to check out the book with no wait lists. There's no holds. You can just check it out and read it, participate in all the conversations online. So yeah, it's this huge big digital book club where everyone is reading the same book.
Yeah, and the title, and you can learn all about it at biglibrary.com, but this particular one is nonfiction. It's called Homes, A Refugee Story. We're gonna have the authors on, I think, actually Saturday. I think we're gonna have to do a special Saturday podcast.
Just think
about our schedule since it launches on Monday. But it is called Homes, A Refugee Story. It's really, really good. It's really interesting. As we mentioned, it runs April 1st to the 15th. So as long as you have a library card, just go into Libby, look at your library, and odds are your library will be a part of it. There's over 20,000 libraries that usually partake. So really good chance that your library will have this book. It will be front and center. So it'll be right there for you. And then if you use the hashtag BigLibraryRead on any social media to talk about it, share your thoughts, share a picture, whatever you want to do, you have a chance to win a Kobo Aura H2O from Overdrive and our sister company, Kobo, which is cool. We're going to run through a lot of names of companies and brands, I'm realizing, in this one.
We are.
So that's Big Library Read. Super cool. You can learn more about it, again, at biglibraryread.com. So that is the Overdrive housekeeping. We have some professional book nerds housekeeping,
we
too.
We do.
So we are super excited. I think this got announced on Twitter last week, but we are officially joining the Evergreen Podcasts channel. So there's a lot of podcast networks out there. Evergreen is technically a podcast channel. So what that means is that we're now a part of this community where people like to go talk about their podcasts, and they have this really, all of the podcasts that are on the Evergreen channel are really like big ideas. The idea of the podcast channel, and it's from Front Porch Media is the name of the company, is their conversations that you would have on a front porch, which I think is wonderful. So I've been kind of working with them for a while to try and set this up since the end of last year. And Jill and I went to their offices, and they have some recording studios.
Right here in Cleveland.
Right here in Cleveland. Technically, a suburb of Cleveland where Jill and I, but we say literally a lot. I say literally a lot, but it's literally around the corner from both of us.
Yes.
So quite convenient. We have our own recording studio here, but hoping to use some of their space in the future because they have some really cool stuff
they
there.
They do have some nice space.
So if you visit evergreenpodcasts.com, you will see our logo, but you'll also see a bunch of logos of other podcasts. And since learning about Evergreen, again, at the end of last year, I have been nerding out on a lot of their podcasts. So I'm just, there's a ton of them here, but some of my favorites. There's one called Retro Tone News. So if you are familiar with the newsreels that used to go on before movies during like World War One or World War II, Retro Tone News is a weekly short news podcast where the host does modern day news, but in that kind of like news of the day. And they have old timey music and it's really, really funny, but it also gives you all the news that's actually going on. So that's really cool. I'm a big fan of that one. There's one called 7 Minute Stories, which is exactly what it sounds like. It's short stories. They're 7 minutes each. And they're very, very interesting and very, very diverse. There's one called Because I Said I Would, which is a podcast all about the promises that people make and that they keep or they don't keep. So there's actually stories from all around the world where people come on the podcast and talk about a story that they or a promise that they made either to a family member or to a coworker. And then they go through the experience of what that promise meant to them and how they kept it or how they didn't. And then the one that I totally am geeking out on and I'm trying to angle really hard to be on at some point is Riffs on Riffs. So there's these two hosts and they break down music, popular music of today and either the tracks that those musical numbers sample from the past or things that inspired those. So the one that I think their most popular episode is Hamilton. They did a Hamilton one, but they'll pull like either basically any popular song. I think they did Uptown Funk was another one they did. So you'll listen to a chunk of the current song that you might recognize, and then they'll tell you where it came from and a whole bunch of background on like the bands that did the original stuff. So it's super, super cool. I think I've sent like 4 emails to the people we work with at Evergreen being like, so like if they ever need a third host to come on, and I have some things I would like to do. So very cool, really exciting. It's going to let us be able to reach more users and also find potential advertisers and sponsors that will be more in tune with what our listeners might be interested in. If you've been a listener for a long time, you may have noticed that the only type of sponsorships we've ever done is publisher sponsorships. And that's because we only wanted to do book-related stuff because we're a book company. We're also fortunate, to be honest, a lot of podcasts need to make money to keep the podcast up and running. This isn't Jill and I's full-time job. We have a lot of other stuff we do here at Overdrive. And because we are a part of a corporation, the corporation handles whatever money we would need.
We're an
in-house podcast, yeah. So because of that, we never really worried about trying to find advertisers. Also, because we didn't have the time. So really excited for a whole bunch of stuff that you guys will be able to see. So go to evergreenpodcast.com. Check out all that good stuff. I feel like I just said so many words. You can also, if you follow us on Twitter and Instagram at ProBookNerds, you'll see all the Evergreen stuff, and we'll be sure to like share a lot of our, I guess, technically sister podcasts, we could call them.
Yeah.
So that's really cool news. And you'll also hear a slightly different outro message in the near future that Jill recorded because she has the radio voice and I don't. Okay. Do you want to talk about what we do for the monthly picks just really quickly, just so
sure.
I can take a sip of coffee?
Sure. So as our longtime listeners know, we've been doing this for a while. I feel like I say this every month, but
it's almost two years.
Every month, at the end of every month, we look ahead to the upcoming month and all of the books that are coming out. And Adam and I pick our favorites that we want to talk about. And so we are talking about April books today. The rules are we don't share lists with each other. I feel like there might be one or two.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. We'll see. We don't share a list. We just start and kind of go back and forth talking about all of the books coming out next month. And I think I have 8, 9.
Yeah, I have somewhere in that area as well. I think I might have 10 or 11. But
just kidding. I have 10.
10? Okay. Well, we can do what we did last month, which I kind of liked. Where like we didn't really go through all of them. We're still going to make the whole list on our website. And all of these titles will be in the show notes, so you don't have to write them down. But like, we'll see how long we run with all these, and we'll either go through all of them or we won't, and then we'll tell you at the end to go to our website.
And again, you don't have to try and write everything down. These will be in the show notes. Yeah. Did you just say that?
I did, but okay. It's good to repeat it. They'll also be on our website. Something that it's not super clear, but if you go to our website and click the About button, the very top of that particular page is updated every month with our reading list as well. Good Lord, that was a lot of housekeeping.
That's a big intro.
Yeah, people were like, hey, we're just here for the books. So,
well, good thing it's the episode everyone likes and listens to. Hopefully they'll stick through it.
Yeah, fingers crossed. All right, you can start if you would like
to. Okay, so my first one is called The Five by Hallie Rubinhold. So this is about the five women who were killed by Jack the Ripper. And history remembers them, of course, as prostitutes, but this is nonfiction, and Hallie has gone in and sort of found out the truth about who they were and sort of what their lives looked like. They came from Fleet Street, Knightsbridge, Wolverhampton, Sweden, and Wales. They wrote ballads, ran coffee shops, lived on country estates. And the only thing they had in common was the year of their murder, which was 1888, when Jack the Ripper stalked the streets of London. So if you are into true crime, if you're into sort of this idea of women's stories being rewritten and finding out the truth of sort of what happened and having the record straight, this is probably the book for you.
I didn't put it on my list because I knew you were going to have it on your list, but I am like, this is when I saw a couple months back that this was coming out, this is like one of my top 10 books I'm most looking forward to. This, I'm so in on this. I'm so fascinated by this. I'm not normally a true crime person, but Jack the Ripper stuff.
I think there is something about Jack the Ripper. And I think the thing about Jack the Ripper, which, to be fair, happens with a lot of serial killers, is that people, I think, forget the victims.
Mm-hmm.
And especially in something like 1888, where it's not obviously contemporary. And so we only have what was written about at the time. And of course, you have like this whole like propaganda thing and whatever. And so, yeah, it's kind of like the Lizzie Borden thing, the book I talked about last month when we did this, just these murders that have kind of entered our consciousness, at this really intense level. And especially with Jack the Ripper and not knowing who actually did it. So there's like that whole element of it, and it's just, well, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, not only that, you're absolutely right about it. I mean, and it's the reason, like, it's not a secret. They talk about it, like, psychologists and all these people talk about the fact that the reason serial killers continue to exist is because serial killers end up getting attention. You know, you just think about, like, you know, John Wayne Gacy or, like, Charles Manson. Like, there's a reason that you know those names and you don't know the people who they murdered, and that should be the other way around, where you should remember the people who lost their lives, and we don't. So it gets glorified. So I'm really, that's why I'm so excited about this book, because it does finally, it seems like it's going to shine some light on the people who should have been focused on the whole time. So, also very dark, but fiction. My first book is The Invited by Jennifer McMahon or McMahon. Did you have this as well?
I did. I read it in a man's copy of it.
Oh, this is a... Okay, you tweeted something about looking up books in advance. Was this,
oh,
the
that
book
was not this one, but it was a different one. But gotcha. Yes, okay. Actually, I did have that same reaction about this book too. But continue.
Okay, so this is it's a ghost story, and because you've read it, you can correct. You can fill in some blanks for me. So it's a ghost story, but the twist is that it's a haunted house book, but it's a husband and wife who actually built the haunted house. So they're in the woods of Vermont, and there is this husband and wife who go to this area. They're on this rural land, and they discover that the property that they are on has this really, really violent past, and Helen, who is the wife of the two, becomes obsessed with this local legend of this Hattie Breckenridge, who's a woman who lived and died there over a century ago, and she also has a passion for artifacts, so she starts finding materials that are related to this Hattie Breckenridge and putting those particular things into the house. And so the house itself kind of takes the evil and everything from this Hattie Breckenridge, and that's how the house becomes haunted, which is an awesome way to look at a book because you always get, you know, The Haunting on Hill House and Amityville Horror. Like, you always get these haunted house stories, and they're always like, oh, well, there was a suicide there. That's why the house is haunted. But this is like, they're actively building a haunted house.
They are, yeah. They are building this house and decide to use a lot of, like, reclaimed wood or various, you know, bricks from a whatever. And it ends up, like, you find out that the spirits essentially are within those. You know, because I think that's always the thing about ghosts. You're like, what happens if you just, like, tear down the building? Like, what happens?
Yeah,
to the
where
ghosts?
Do they go?
Where do they go? Yeah.
Or if it's poltergeist, they actually take the house with them themselves.
That's true as well.
All right. What's your next one?
That's an excellent question. What is my next one?
I do the same thing. I have, like, my list here, but there's no real order I want to talk about.
No, there's no order. All right. So I'm going to go with Wicked Saints by Emily Duncan. Did you have that on your list?
No, but I knew you would because reasons.
Right. So I ended up interviewing Emily. And we had a very, very strange connection when I interviewed her. I interviewed at ALA. Not a strange connection. We had an unexpected connection. So this, when I was first presented with the opportunity of interviewing her, Alexis, who works here, said her book was being sold as, like, a Russian medieval version of Joan of Arc. I was like, all right, cool, I'm in.
So good.
So this is about a girl who can speak to gods and must save her people without destroying herself. There's, like, this dark prince. Like, Emily and I talked a lot about, like, loving villains. And if you, like, love villains and love to fall in love with villains, this is a book you're going to want to read. It's the part of a new series. I'm really, really excited for this one. So that's Wicked Saints by Emily Duncan.
All right. We went dark three books in a row. So I'm going to go light now. My next one is called No Country for Old Gnomes. It's the second book in the Tales of Pell series by Kevin Hearn and Delilah S. Dawson. It is, oh man. So the first one of these was called Kill the Farm Boy, and I listened to the audiobook, and holy hell, was it funny. It's so good. And so what they're doing, I mean, you can read the first one like I did and kind of understand the world of Pell that they've created, but it seems like these are, like, unrelated stories that are just all, basically they've built this absurd medieval fairy tale land, and now they're telling various stories in it that may or may not be related. I'm assuming there's going to be some, like, Easter eggs in there, but I'm just going to read, bear with me, because I'm going to read a quick paragraph that the description is, because it sounds hilarious. War is coming, and it's going to be Pell. Good start. On one side stands the gnomes, small, cheerful, possessing tidy cardigans and no taste for cruelty. On the other side sit the halflings, proudly astride their war alpacas, carrying bags of grenades and hungry for a fight, and pretty much anything else. It takes only one halfling bomb, and Ophi's world is turned upside down, or downside up, really, since he lives in a hole in the ground. His goth cardigans and aggressive melancholy set him apart from the other gnomes, as does his decision to fight back against his halfling oppressors. Suddenly, he's the leader of a band of lovable misfits and outcasts. From a griffin who would literally kill for omelets, a young dwarf herbalist A young dwarf herbalist who is better with bees than his cudgel, to an assertive and cheerful teen witch with a beard as long as her book of curses. All on a journey to the Toot Towers to confront the dastardly villain intent on tearing Pell asunder. It's basically, if you're a fan of, like, Terry Pratchett or Monty Python, these books are so for you. And I'm hoping the audiobook is just as good as the first one, because it was wonderful. So that's No Country for Old Gnomes, The Tales of Pell.
I have Southern Lady Code by Helen Ellis. Helen Ellis wrote American Housewife, which is a short story collection that came out a couple years ago and was just, like, huge. Like, everyone was reading American Housewife. So she is back with Southern Lady Code, which are essays. And Helen is from the South originally, but lives here in New York, or up here in New York in the North. Yankee land.
Yankee land. The Union.
I am having issues this morning. Okay. So the best way to describe this book is, you know, sort of taking this idea of, you know, when a Southerner says bless your heart, it sounds like one thing but needs another. And so she kind of plays a little bit on that, and she writes essays, true essays, about her life. And I also met her at ALA, and she is a huge Libby fan.
Yeah.
She's a huge Libby fan. When I post the interview in a couple weeks, you'll see the picture. She wanted to, like, she has, like, Libby on her phone. She's like, look at Libby. I love Libby. We took a picture in front of the giant Libby. She's hilarious in person, just like she is with in her books. And she also has, like, a little podcast called Southern Lady. Not little. It's short. Short, where she kind of goes into these Southern Lady codes. I don't know why this is such a challenge.
You just kind of Southern Lady coded her podcast.
For me.
It's a cute little podcast.
To talk about. I don't. Yeah.
Bless her podcast.
Sorry, Helen. Sorry. We've already recorded the episode and the interview, so it's too late. You can't, like, take it back. But be on our podcast.
Talking about her loving Libby, I'm doing this massive overdrive campaign that's taking forever that I'm not going to get into right now, but she created a video for it for me, talking about some books that she recommended, and I got the kind of B-roll version of it from the publisher producer, and it starts off with her yelling I love Libby. I'm like, well, I'm going to use that for something.
And I think that's sort of funny is that she's lived in New York for a while now, but she still holds on to that Southern accent of hers.
She sure does.
She's so delightful in person, by the way. Oh my gosh. She was wearing, she was wearing cat ears. Like, there was at the booth at the ALA, somebody had cat ears. Somebody was giving out little cat ear headbands, and she shows up to our interview wearing them. I'm like, cool.
Victoria Schwab does that. It's like her, almost like a safety blanket or something, you would think. That's kind of gives her that's her superpower.
No, I think Helen just liked them and just wanted to wear them.
Oh, no, I know. I'm just saying.
She doesn't
strike me as someone who gets shy in public.
She does not.
Yeah. Oh, man. I'm so excited to read that. My next one is Odd Partners. This is actually an anthology by the Mystery Writers of America, edited by Ann Perry. So basically, the description of it is throughout the annals of fiction, there have been a ton of celebrated detective teams, Sherlock Holmes and Watson, Nick and Nora Charles, Poirot and Hastings. And what she does is she got a whole bunch of famous authors together, and she had them each write mystery stories that needed to be solved, these whodunits. But she picked people that you wouldn't normally expect to be paired together. So one of them's an English sergeant and his German counterpart in World War I. But there are other ones that feature honeybees and a beekeeper. And a wandering cat brings home clues to a murderer, and a gray wolf and a fly fisherman in Minnesota woods try to protect their land from a billionaire. All sorts of just random pairings you wouldn't expect. And I'm very interested in it. I think it's going to be really, really good. So that's Odd Partners. And again, it's by the Mystery Writers of America, but it's edited by Ann Perry. It's an anthology.
I have Trust Exercise by Susan Choi. In an American suburb in the early 1980s, students at a highly competitive performing arts high school struggle and thrive in a rarefied bubble, ambitiously pursuing music, movement, Shakespeare, and particularly their acting classes. When within this driving brotherhood of the arms, two freshmen, David and Sarah, fall headlong into love, their passion does not go unnoticed by anyone, especially not by their charismatic acting teacher, Mr. Kingsley. The outside world of family and life and economic status, of academic pressure, and of their future adult lives fails to penetrate this school's walls, until it does in a shocking spiral of events that catapults the action forward in time and flips the premise upside down. What the reader believes to have happened to David and Sarah and their friendship is not entirely true, though it's not false either. It takes until the book's stunning coda for the final piece of the puzzle to fall into place, revealing truths that will resonate long after the final sentence. So basically we have fame with
really
some
do.
Crazy ending, which I'm I'm here. I am here for this.
That sounds so good. That sounds really, really good. My next one is called Hot Dog Girl by Jennifer Duggan. This is a contemporary YA rom-com but it stars teens working as costume characters at a local amusement park. There was a movie that came out a long time ago with Kristen Stewart and Wonderland or something. I can't remember what it was called. Was it Wonderland?
Possibly.
Maybe.
Was it with the kid from Arrested Development? Was he in it too?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he was. Also, I can't believe you referred to him as the kid from Arrested Development and not like, the comic book movie.
Oh, I'm well aware of what you're talking about. I just can't remember the name.
Scott Pilgrim.
That's why I refer to him as the kid.
Yeah, Scott Pilgrim and also Zombieland. None of this matters. This Hot Dog Girl, getting back to the book. So it's a coming of age tale of teenagers, much like you would see in like a high school book or anything like that. But it's in they all have summer jobs at this amusement park. So the main character's name is Lou, and she landed an awesome job at Magic Castle Playland as a giant dancing hot dog. Her crush, the dreamy diving pirate Nick, already has a girlfriend who is literally the princess of the park. But Lou's never liked anyone, guy or girl, otherwise as much before, and now she wants a chance at her own happily ever after. So there's a big group of friends, and it just feels very much like a Dazed and Confused summer style, YA book, which I'm very excited about. And the cover is really, really fun. It's like a cartoon, and the main character is standing awkwardly in her hot dog. So that's Hot Dog Girl. I said this to Christina because a little secret about Christina, her favorite food on earth is hot dogs, which is so random. And like if you guys were to ever meet Christina in real life, she looks like a little tiny sprite of a human. But she eats hot dogs and dessert like she hasn't seen food in 7 months. It's so funny and adorable. Like, so if you give her a hot dog, she just loses focus on anything else other than the hot dog. And so I sent that to her and she's like, it's me. I'm the hot dog girl.
That's adorable.
Yeah.
My next one is The Princess and the Fangirl by Ashley Poston. So this is about Imogene. She is a fangirl for this TV show Starfield, and she is worried that her favorite character, Princess Amara, is going to be killed off. And of course, this is a problem, as we all know, when we think our favorite character is going to be killed off. So the problem is that she's like trying to like campaign for the show to keep her, the character on, except the actress, Jessica, who plays Princess Amara, is kind of like done and wants to leave the show. And she is going to convention, Chelsea Con, and she and Imogene run into each other there and they find out they look a lot alike. And then the script for the TV show leaks and they decide to switch places. And in doing so, they switch places.
Yep.
Like you're going to do. It's like the Princess and the Pauper, the Prince and the Pauper, but it's Princess and the Fangirl. And I Ashley had previously written a book called Geekerella, which is a Cinderella.
That's it.
Yeah. So this is kind of like her thing. She sort of takes fairy tales and sets them in a, geek nerd.
So here for it.
Setting of conventions and TV shows and all that stuff. So, yeah, that's the Princess and the Fangirl.
Nice. Yeah. I knew the name sounded familiar. My next one is Miracle Creek by Angie Kim. So in rural Virginia, Young and Pak Yu run an experimental medical treatment device known as the Miracle Submarine. It's a pressurized oxygen chamber that patients enter for therapeutic dives with the hopes of curing issues like autism or infertility. But when the Miracle Submarine mysteriously explodes, killing two people, a dramatic murder trial upends the Yu's small community. The ensuing trial uncovers unimaginable secrets from that night, trysts in the woods, mysterious notes, child abuse charges, as well as tentative rivalries and alliances among a group of people driven to extraordinary degrees of desperation and sacrifice. I read Harlan Coben's book, and now I'm reading another mystery that I'm going to get to in just a moment here. So I'm very into these very interesting thrillers, as you will. So it literally says for fans of Leanne Moriarty, so I think it'll be very family-driven drama.
Okay, so on the subject of family-driven drama, I have Little Darlings by Melanie Golding. This is about a new mom, Lauren, who just has had twins, Morgan and Riley. She's never been more tired in her entire life. But she is convinced that she saw a woman try to take her babies and replace them with these, like, creatures.
Ah!
But when the police arrive to the hospital, no one is seen, nothing has happened, and everyone from her doctor and her husband is convinced she's just tired and imagining things. So a month goes by, and then the babies disappear from her side when she's in a park. And when they're found, something is different about them. They look like her twins to everyone else, but to Lauren, something is off. And as everyone around her is so happy and starts to celebrate finding them, Lauren is like, these are not my babies. Mm. And no one believes her. So I think there's like a lot to unpack here. I mean, like, no, do you know what yeah. I mean? No, like, just oh, like, yeah. This is just like a thriller. It's sort of based on this idea of changelings, of babies being stolen and then replaced with creatures that look like them but aren't them. But I think, you know, in this world where women are not often believed about things, there, like I said, there's lots to unpack in this book that is, you know, just like a thriller thing. But
this sounds extremely Twilight Zone-y, and that's very on point since Twilight Zone is coming back this week with Jordan Peele. Yeah, uh-huh. I can find a way to connect Twilight Zone just by anything, really. I'm so excited for it. I actually kind of want to... I'm holding back until I see an episode or two this weekend because I'm thinking about pitching to you a Twilight Zone, like, episode, but...
You're thinking about it? I'm pretty sure you just did.
I think I just did, just now.
I would not be opposed to that.
Okay.
We'll see. I love me some Twilight Zone.
All right. We'll see. My next one is The Old Drift by Namwali Sirpel. This is a story set on the banks of the Zambezi River. There is a colonial settlement near the Victoria Falls called The Old Drift, and here begins the epic story of a small African nation told by a mysterious swarm-like chorus that calls itself man's greatest nemesis. Is it a tale, a playful panorama of history, fairy tale, romance, and science fiction, or is it all about learning morals? In 1904, in a smoky room at the hotel across the river, an old drifter named Percy, foggy with fever, makes a mistake that entangles the fate of an Italian hotelier and an African busboy. This sets off a cycle of unwitting retribution between three Zambian families, one black, one white, one brown, as they collide and converge over the course of a century into the present and beyond. So this novel kind of reminds me of a book I read back in January called An Orchestra of Minorities by Chigozie Obiama, in the sense that it has the same, like, weird storytelling using, like, a Greek chorus kind of a thing. So I'm very interested. And it's also, I like me a sweeping novel that has decades and decades of stories to be told. So, very excited for this one. You are now up.
Okay. So, I always feel like favorite books define people. You know what I mean? Like, you can tell a lot about a person by some of their favorite books.
Oh, yeah.
One of my favorite books, hands down, is American Psycho by Bret Easton Ellis.
What an incredible preface.
So that is my way of prefacing this by saying that Bret Easton Ellis is back, this time though with a nonfiction book, which I believe is his first nonfiction book. It's called White. Bret Easton Ellis is just one of those literary characters that you can't quite pin down, and he's very enigmatic. He does not do a lot of public appearances. He's also really good friends with Donna Tartt, who wrote The Secret History. So that's a fun little fact there. Anyway, so in his new book of nonfiction, he kind of just is someone who just, like, tells the truth at whatever the cost. And he does that in this book. He, according to the description, pours himself out onto the page and in doing so eviscerates the perceived good that the social media age has wrought, starting with the dangerous cult of likability. White is both a denunciation of censorship, particularly the self-inflicted sort committed in hopes of being accepted, and the bracing view of a life devoted to authenticity.
I just, so far this episode, you have said something along the lines of, like, if you love rooting for villains, and then also, one of my favorite books is American Psycho.
I love it. It is so good. It is so good. It's just...
It is very good. I'm just, I'm like a little curious about what your next picks are going to be here. Speaking, we'll stay dark. My next one is The Better Sister by Alifair Burke, who I just started reading this actually last night, and I am going to be interviewing her later this month at Cuyahoga Library. So it's a story of two sisters, Chloe and Nikki. And though Chloe was the younger of the two sisters, she always seemed to be the one in charge. She was the honor roll student. She earned an awesome job in New York City, all this good stuff. And then, meanwhile, Nikki married this promising young attorney. But what ended up happening is Nikki became kind of what seems like a junkie and sort of strung out. And so they lost touch. They became virtual strangers. And Adam, eventually, is the name of this attorney. He divorces Nikki and strikes up a relationship with Chloe, and they get married, and then 15 years later, he gets murdered by an intruder at the couple's house in the Hamptons, and then they had a teenage son, but it was actually Chloe's stepson. It was her sister's son, so you can see how it's quite messy. And then after the murder, what ends up happening is the son becomes a suspect, and so the sisters kind of have to reunite and confront the truth about deep, dark family secrets they have tried to keep buried in the past. So, speaking of Harlan Coben describes it on the back of the book as this year's Gone Girl. So, I just started it last night. It's really, really good. It's really quick, and there's a lot of like, oh man, people are crappy. That's oh man, this is a troubled family. So. And the tagline is "Keep your enemies close and your sister closer," which I enjoy.
Yeah, well. Mm-hmm. My next one is "The Mother-in-Law" by Sally Hemsworth. I will preface this by saying I like my mother-in-law, so don't, you know.
Okay, that's a good start. Yeah, I think you do need to do these prefaces at this point.
So this is a thriller type thing where the woman Lucy, as soon as she met her husband's mom, Diana, she knew that Diana didn't really see a woman like Lucy as marrying her her son. And Diana always sort of keeps Lucy at arm's length and is, you know, she's known as this like pillar in the community. And no one has anything bad to say about her except Lucy. That was 5 years ago. And now Diana is dead. A suicide note is found near her body claiming that she no longer wanted to live because of the cancer wreaking havoc inside her body. The problem is the autopsy finds no cancer, but it does find poison. And so it's a question of like who, you know, possibly could have wanted this woman, Diana, dead. And of course, Lucy appears to be the only one with any problems with her. And so, yeah, I'm good.
Murder most foul, it sounds like. My next one is King of Fools by Amanda Foody. Amanda was on the show a long, long time ago at this point. So she wrote one of my favorite YA books ever called Daughter of the Burning City, all about this like magical, traveling, mysterious carnival that's the size of a city. And I got so mad at her because she told me it was a standalone because I wanted to live in that world forever. The reason it was a standalone is because she was working on this other book at the time called Ace of Shades. Ace of Shades is sort of like a magical Vegas setting, and there's murder and death and all sorts of stuff in Ace of Shades. And it's awesome, and it has everything to do with this shadow game that is basically like a dice and card game that you play that almost it's for your soul is kind of how the first book sort of ends up. I'm not going to tell you what happens, but this is the second book in her shadow game series, King of Fools. And at this point, this is her third book, and she has hit the status of I will read anything she writes. So it's Amanda Foody. You can go back and listen to her. Talk to me a long, long time ago. If you search for her on our website, it'll pop up. But read anything by her. She's awesome. All right, so those are all the books we're going to talk about because we're running a little longer than we normally do. But if you want to see our full lists, you can go to our website, professionalbooknerds.com. We'll tweet it out and all that good stuff too. But I think we each have like two or three more So in addition to all these, you can find some more recommendations there. So I think that's everything.
I think that's everything.
Okay, cool. Well, thanks for being with us for all of our news and updates at the beginning. And hopefully you got a really good recommendation here that you liked. If not, just shoot us an email, professionalbooknerds@overdrive.com. And we'll help you out. So hope you guys enjoyed these April picks, this very special and lengthy episode of the Professional Book Nerds podcast.
Readers can sample and borrow the titles mentioned in today's episode from overdrive.com, and our library friends can purchase these titles in Marketplace. Professional Book Nerds is proud to be an Evergreen Podcast signature program. To learn about other Evergreen podcasts, visit evergreenpodcasts.com. Our podcast is produced, recorded, and edited by Adam Sokol and Jill Grunewald, and presented by Rakuten Overdrive. For more information, visit professionalbooknerds.com.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.